At this time, at Radio Time of Tremendous Achdut, we stood at verse 9 on our third day. One person with one heart, and it's so beautiful to just bring us all together. We also, it says that the Torah was given to is a famous rabbi, not only in the bush, but has taught many of our students. And I was just saying, for those different schools, Rav Moshe teaches Kayla, very proud to have a Bulgarian of our school in Mikalos. And really special. So I won't take up any more time. Rav Moshe, thank you very, very much for being here. Thanks for joining us in South Africa.
Thank you, Natalie. Thank you. Okay, good morning. Nice to be here. Thank you for welcoming me. I want to tell you a story, okay? Thank you. So, as you can probably imagine, I do a lot of traveling. I'm on a lot of planes. And I meet a lot of interesting people. For one story, I met a very interesting young man. Let me tell you the story. It was about 20 years ago, and I was flying out of a major hub in America called Chicago, which is a huge airport. And I get to the airport after this immensely challenging day. I had gotten up in the morning from New York to make my flight to Chicago. It's about a 3-hour flight. I got up at 3 a.m. to catch my 6 o'clock flight. I'd given shiurim and met people and a bar mitzvah at a wedding, and I was exhausted. And I pulled my tired body to the airport for my 10 o'clock flight back to New York. And all of a sudden, I walk into the airport and I see the dreaded words that every traveler hates to see. Delayed. Ay, gefal. Ras kinachtun. Okay, it's delayed. I sit and I wait. Finally, at 1:30 in the morning, they make an announcement. The last flight out of Chicago, it's leaving back for New York. Please show up at the gate. So I run with my little bags to the gate, and I finally get on the plane. And as I'm walking on the plane, I say, Baruch Hashem, it's such a long day. So many people, now I have 2.5 hours, no one knows my name. No one knows who I am. I could just learn and just be by myself. Baruch Hashem, I'm so looking forward to this. And I get into the back of the plane where my seat is, and I turn to the person next to me, and I have to be courteous when you travel. I say, have a pleasant flight. The man looks back at me, have a pleasant flight. Baruch Hashem, I take out my Gemara and I start learning. Olam Haba, 2.5 hours, no one's going to bother me, no one's going to check for me, I just have it to myself. The guy is a little bit of a nudnik, so he starts saying, what are you reading? I don't know who he is, I have to explain this. Ancient Jewish law. Okay. He's a little more curious, George. He said, no, what part of Jewish law? I said, well, I was learning Maseches Nida. I'm not going to explain this to this man on the plane. The Kedusha, the beauty of Nida, but how do I explain it to this foreigner? No, I said, ancient Jewish hygiene. And then I'm trying to explain to him, and he looks at me and he says the 5 words I least wanted him to say. He could have said 5 words, could have gone to Google and randomized 5 words. He could have quoted 5 words from Shakespeare. All of a sudden he says, oh, don't worry, I'm a Jew. And I look up at Hashem and I say, Kodesh Baruch Hu, I've been working so hard for you the whole day in learning and shiurim and working and mitzvahs. Can't you give me a break? Could you sit me next to an Irish monk or a stewardess or, I don't know, some... Now I have to start being the kind of this guy and start talking to him. And okay, you know, Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't give you choices. You know, it puts you into situations in life. And you don't get to choose. You just have to get to respond. You don't get to choose oftentimes where you live. You don't get to choose when the electricity goes on or off. You don't get to choose what the world says about you and Eretz Yisrael. The one thing you can choose is how to respond. That's yours. You can be small, you can be tall. It's your choice. You could be tired, or you could be courageous. You could walk away, or you could take responsibility. That's always your choice. No one can take freedom of choice from you. Everything else that you have in this world could be taken from you. Hashem gave you choice and conscience that can't be taken from you. Protect it. Develop it. Make the right choices. No other creature in this world has freedom of conscience. Only you. So I made the decision that night that I'm not going to just slink into my seat and ignore this man. I'm going to try to change his life as best as I can in 3 hours or less. So I start making small talk with him. What do you do? He's a professor. Where are you a professor? He's a professor in MIT. Whoa. I'm shaking in my boots. I've met a lot of smart people in this world, trust me. Not what's up here, it's what's in here. Okay? Don't be impressed with people who have smarts. They're just brain cells. They're just neurons. I met the smartest person I'll ever meet in my entire life. And you know what? There's also the firmest person I've ever met in my life. His name was Aaron Lichtenstein. I'm good to go. I don't walk into a room and get intimidated by people with a lot of brain cells. Doesn't mean anything to me. I get inspired by people with a lot of heart. Right choice, commitment, morality, traits, family, love, open heart. That's what impresses me. Doesn't impress me people who can read books. I can read books also. So I said to him, oh, it's nice that you're a professor at MIT. I'm a Rebbe and Gush. We have a lot in common. So I started giving him some tips about how to be a better professor, how to plan his lessons better, because I'm a little more experienced than him. I asked him, are you married? He says, no, he's not married. I took his number down. Maybe I'll find a shidduch. I don't really know so many women in general. Most of the women I know are firm women, but who knows? You never know who you're going to meet in the next flight. Maybe the next flight, I'll meet a professoress from MIT or something. I'll hook them up and they'll make a shidduch. And then he turns to me and says, Rabbi, I don't understand something. He says, I can understand falling in love with a woman and my trajectory and her trajectory overlap and our trajectories converge, but I'm going to continue to grow, and my trajectory will continue, and she'll continue to grow, and her trajectory, then it'll deviate, and it'll be discrepant, and the offset, I'm trying to explain to this professor of MIT that marriage isn't physics. It's not about vectors and trajectories and offsets. It's not, actually, it's more chemistry than it's physics. It's not physics. You marry someone, you commit to that person, you build a life together, you love each other most of the time. Most of the time, some of the time, you're not so much in love with one another. That's the beauty of marriage. You're committed. Let's build a world together. Let's build a family together. Let's share our finances. Let's share our hearts. Let's share our honesty. Let's share our secrets. And the more you live, the more you grow together. So then I finally give him this answer, tearing my Gemara, and then he like taps me on the shoulder, says, Rabbi, I always wanted to know. I said, oh gosh, here it comes. I always wanted to know. What makes Judaism different from all the other religions? After all, you look around the world, there are so many traditions. And I'm not talking about these newfangled, crazy, hippie religions. I'm talking about the established religions that have been existent for hundreds and thousands of years, that millions of people are part of, the Muslims and the Christians. After all, if you just break it all down, can you prove anything? Can I prove to you that Har Sinai took place? I can't prove it to you. It's not empirical. No proof to it. What do I believe? You know why I believe? Listen carefully, girls, because this weekend, we're going to work on our belief. The whole year, we work on what does Rashi say, and what's the halacha, and how do we daven. But the next 2 days, try to work on, as best you can, why I believe. Where does it come from? So you know why I believe? Because I met great people who taught me about Har Sinai, and they passed on traditions from their great people. Let me tell you about the man I mentioned before. I met a person who I feel was the Gadol Hador. His name was Aaron Lichtenstein. And if you asked me before I met him to describe him, in a million years I could not have described that person. That's how impressive he was in every aspect of his religion. And I have a pretty good imagination. If you asked me to imagine him, I couldn't have described him. That's how overwhelmingly pious and erudite and scholarly and religious he was. And you know what he told me about his Rebbe? His Rebbe was Rabbi Soloveitchik. And when he described Rabbi Soloveitchik to me, he described Rabbi Soloveitchik in the same way that I saw him, that I saw Rav Lichtenstein. He said, let me tell you about my Rebbe, he once said. When I met Rabbi Soloveitchik, I was so blown away. I couldn't have ever imagined ever meeting someone like that. let's see, I met Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who was my Rebbe, and I could never imagine him. And he told me about his Rebbe, he couldn't imagine. And then he said, when Rav Salavation told me about his Rebbe, Rav Chaim, who was his Rebbe in Europe in the late 19th century, early 20th, Rabbi Soloveitchik described his Rebbe to my Rebbe in ways that I saw my Rebbe. Rabbi Soloveitchik told Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, let me tell you about Rav Chaim. When I met Rav Chaim, Rabbi Soloveitchik says, I could never have imagined someone like Rav Chaim. So I received Torah from Rav Lichtenstein, who received Torah from Rabbi Soloveitchik, who received Torah from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and I could trace it back, and I'm part of that Masorah. And I also received Torah from my father, who received Torah from his father, who received Torah, and I know that tradition. So I'm a pretty smart guy, and I try to understand my world, and I try to read, but I know the limits of self-mediated knowledge. I know that I can't know it all. Smart people know they can't access all information. I've got certain tools, but my tools are limited. I've got cognition, I've got ration, I can study, I can explore, but there's a limit. There's an upper limit. I'm going to hit a ceiling. And at some point, I have to be brave enough to realize that the deeper mysteries of this world can be accessed by delivered truth, not just by self-acquired truth. It takes intellectual courage and intellectual fortitude to know the limits of intellect and to know you can break through those limits by operating in ways that aren't always empirical. In a couple of years, you'll have to make that decision. There is no algorithm that I know of to predict marital success. Baruch Hashem, I have a beautiful marriage. Beautiful. It's the greatest decision I ever made. I married 33 years, grandchildren. Baruch Hashem, it's the beauty of my life. I married an amazing person. When I walked down the aisle, there was nothing that would indicate whether I'd be successful or not. And I made a decision by looking deep inside of myself and making a decision which wasn't rational, but based on passion and love and trust and confidence. So you have to learn how to acquire knowledge, not just through here. So much of what goes on in this campus is training this, but it has to trickle down. It's just the medium to make you a better person, to make you understand how to achieve truth. So nothing that we believe in can be proven empirically. This man was asking me, so what's the difference, he said, between Judaism and Christianity? What's the difference between Judaism and Islam? He said, you have a really good point. You know how you really grow in life, girls? Growth starts with intellectual honesty. If you lie to yourself, you can never reach truth, because you misappropriate information. You need to ask whether things make sense. Now, a religious person, when things don't make sense, says, well, now how can I make it, how can I reconcile? A non-religious person, when they reach that first bump in the road, says, it doesn't make sense, I'm out. I'm finished. A religious person says, you know what, it doesn't make sense to me. Let me see if I can ask someone and work at it. You have to learn how to be intellectually rigorous. When's the last time? Here's a good exercise for students, okay? Great exercise. Because we live in such a quick world and our attention span moves so quickly and everything happens so quickly. Maybe part of what's happening here in this country is an opportunity to slow things down. And you don't always have electricity. I know it's hard for me. I'm coming in from Israel. I have electricity, so. No, seriously, seriously. Treating you like adults, girls. I didn't mean that in any way to be humorous. Sit down at some point over Yom Kippur and take an issue of Torah or religion. Here's a challenge, okay? 2 days. And think about it by yourself, without being distracted, for 15 minutes. When's the last time you thought about an issue for 15 minutes straight? It's hard, because we move so quickly. And our minds are in such a rush, just to gobble up more information. Less is more. Don't think that the more information you gather, the more you'll understand life. Sometimes the less information you gather gives you time to process it and to internalize it and to absorb it. So try to think, when something hits you, whether it's, as Natalie was saying, growth or the role of women or the Torah, just try to sit there and say, what does this mean to me? Because you have to ask questions. If you don't start with intellectual honesty, you'll never process it. It won't be shallow platitudes. It won't just be sayings and kind of, this is what I believe in. But it doesn't settle into your neshama. To settle into your neshama, it has to make sense to you. But just because it doesn't make sense to you doesn't mean you abandon it. It just means, okay, I don't have all the information. I'm going to work with it. I write articles. I write a weekly article for the Jerusalem Post. You know, sometimes I work 4 or 5 days before I even sit down to write. Just hashing things over in my mind, developing ideas, thinking about what I want to write. Sometimes I just sit there and it just comes right out. Sometimes it takes me a while just to formulate where I'm heading. and how I'd like to see the ideas unfold and how the sequencing will operate. So I told this guy, this MIT professor, you have a good point. Here's the difference. I totally and completely can accept the fact that Jesus walked on water, because that tradition has been passed down from generation to generation. And I totally, and most parents love their children and don't lie to their children. And most teachers love their students and don't lie to their students. So if it's been passed on by hundreds of millions of people, it's probably somewhat true. And I totally believe that Jesus healed people. You know what that means? That means that Jesus had access to the world of black magic and therefore was able to walk on water and was able to heal people, because there was a world in which magic was more part of their reality. We don't live in that world anymore, but you all know that in the ancient world, for every reason, a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave people access to non-rational ability to affect the world, to change material. Look at Mitzrayim. Look at the magicians of Egypt changing water to blood and changing for himself. Somehow he had access to that world and he performed miracles. It razzled and dazzled everyone. I'm willing to accept that. It doesn't mean he's just a religion. It's a religion of the magician who performed great prophecies. His students thought that he was the God. I completely and totally accept the fact that Muhammad had a dream one night in which God told him to conquer the world and introduce a new religion. You know how many people have those dreams? Most of them end up in the funny part. He was charismatic enough to change the world. Just because a man had a dream in which God told him something, which I totally accepted because it was passed down from father to child, from mother to child, just like my tradition. I have to be intellectually honest. If the source of my faith is to pass down truths from parent to child and teacher to student, then I have to give credibility to their traditions as well. So I'm giving full credibility. Whatever they say, more or less. Not every detail, more or less happened. He walked on water, he healed people. Great. He walked on water, he's a magician. He healed people, great. He had students who thought he was God. I wish I had students like him. Great. And he was a prophet, he had a dream which got... You know what my tradition is? Here it is. Here's our tradition. Listen carefully. No religion has ever claimed it because it's too audacious. Our tradition is, I can't prove it, because religion is a leap of faith. But once you accept that leap of faith, listen to where you're leaping. We stood at Har Sinai, 3 million people strong, shoulder to shoulder, hearing the direct voice of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, teaching us his will and speaking to us in a way that wasn't hallucinatory, because it could be corroborated. Did you hear what I hear? 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 We could look at one another and corroborate it. It wasn't some fantasy of my mind. It wasn't some drug-induced hallucination. It could be corroborated by mutual experience. And Hashem told us what he wants. And that never happened before in history. It never happened since. I can't tell you what will happen when Mashiach comes. It's hard to know. We don't know the details. And I can't prove it to you. That's where it's a leap of faith. But once I make that leap, you know what? Everything that happened in Har Sinai is inalienable. It can change. I can walk out and see that mountain, whatever that mountain's called over there, and see that mountain levitate in the sky, whirl and rotate. I could see the moon bleed. I could see the oceans roar. Nothing will shake. I can see the Holocaust. I once asked Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Rebbe, what is Emunah? And he said, your Emunah should be so rock solid that you could be capable, listen to this, of being the last Jew to walk out of Auschwitz, the last Jew alive on this earth, when everything has seemed to crumble and nothing makes sense. And your Emunah shouldn't be disturbed. Because it doesn't come from things that happen in this world. It comes from that moment which cannot be overtaken, which cannot be usurped. And I told this man, that's what makes Judaism different. Not how it was transmitted, but the content of what was transmitted. Not the machinery of the Masorah, the content of the Masorah. How is a Masorah handed down? There are no scientific tools to prove Har Sinai. It doesn't exist. I know Har Sinai happened because of my Rabbanim. And I know Har Sinai happened because of my parents. That's it. I have no other way to prove it to you. And I'm smart enough to know that I can accept truths that my mind can't reconcile. And I accept that truth, and when I close my eyes at night and I have doubts, and part of everyone is having doubts because you can't prove it. I don't have a doubt that this is a cup of tea because it's empirical. I don't have a doubt that 2 + 2 = 4 because it's mathematical. But Emunah is something which you can never put your fingers there and you can never grasp. It's not tangible. So having a doubt is healthy. Living with doubt that gnaws at you and can't, that's already an issue. And don't Don't feel bad about yourself. You're being honest. Find people that can help you. But the fact, some people, the second that a doubt creeps into their mouth, they're, oh, no, I'm not firm. What's happening to me? You're allowed to have a doubt. How do I? I don't know. I know this is a cup of tea. I don't doubt that, but I know Hashem exists. But so when I close my eyes at night and I think about how I deal with my doubts, I don't think about a math equation. I don't think about a formula. I think about the people in my life. I think about my Zaidi. I think about my Rebbe. So here's another challenge for this Yom Tov for you. Okay, remember the first challenge? 15 minutes thinking about one issue. Here's the second challenge. Who do you get your faith from? When you close your eyes at night, when you think about faith, who do you say, well, if that person believes, and I'm so impressed with that person's lifestyle, and I know them well, and I see the way they behave, and I see the way they conduct themselves, I'm good to go. That's my anchor. Imagine faith as a big tree of people, and you're holding onto people's ankles, and they're holding onto other people's ankles, and they're holding onto other people's ankles. And now you're at the stage where you're finding people to hold on to their ankles. And one day, people will hold on to your ankles. I remember, everyone listen kids, a very, very personal story. About 6 years ago when my Rebbe passed away, Ronald Lichtenstein, I was in mourning for weeks. I couldn't function, I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep. It was really hard for me. And at some point I told my wife the following, I said, you know, until this point, my goal in life was to be a connector. I wasn't a Rebbe. I said, if I could just connect my Talmidim to my Rebbe Rav Aaron, I'd be happy. I'd be successful because he was such a big tzaddik. But he's not there anymore. And now I have to be the source, not the connector. And now it's on me to build emunah in people. And that's not something I was ready for. I was always a connector. I didn't feel that I had the resonance and the confidence to be the source of people's avodas Hashem. And all I was to see my Rebbe, come learn. Come to my yeshiva and learn with my Rebbe like I did. And now I can no longer be that middleman. I had to be the source of emunah. And I wasn't prepared for that. And I always said, suck it up and do it. I go, always say, you can do it. Stop being such a baby. And take out the garbage while you're at it. It's just a shift. It can make a shift. So here, girls, are two challenges for you over Yom Tov, okay? Number one, think. Slow things down. Read less. Think more. More is less. Less is more. Don't try to consume pages. There are three levels of knowledge. Listen carefully. There's information. Higher than information is knowledge. Higher than knowledge is wisdom. It's like a ladder. Information is who, what, when, where, and how. Knowledge is things that are important, not just stupid trivia. Wisdom is you take it all together and you have some insight into yourself, into your life, into your future. Many of you are at the age where you should be moving into the world of wisdom out of the world of knowledge. Number one, less is more, 15 minutes. Number two, who's the person that you want to think about at night when you're looking for Hashem and you're trying to find it through someone else, okay? Thank you for giving me the chance to speak. Everyone have a great Yom Tov. I'll see you all over Yom Tov.
Girls, and Moshe will be on this campus throughout Yom Tov and Shabbos. So, and I know what's happening in the main lecture tonight. I think main lecture, you may sit, thank you. Main lecture at 10, and then definitely there's a Midrash Hour lecture just for the girls, I think at 11. So, please just see the schedule, we will send it out. And thank you so much for
coming. Good job, thank you, Ashka. Good job, good
job. One second, wait. Thank you.
Do you know where you're going?
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah,
thank you.
When you teach, it needs to go back. Good to see you. I'll see you every now and then. Teach.